Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. As always, we are joined by our super producer, Noel Hyundai Brown.
And, Hyundai.
Mm-hmm, and by you as well, ladies and gentlemen. That makes this Car Stuff.
Car Stuff. Now, wait a second. Wait. I thought we were going to go with NSYNC for the nickname.
We did originally. Full disclosure, when we first started the show, I did give Noel the honorable nickname, Noel NSYNC Brown.
Well, there's a lot of jokes to be made there, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, boy band jokes, many of them.
Well, lots of them, yeah. I almost prefer it. I don't know. Hyundai's good.
Hyundai's good.
Hyundai's good. NSYNC, I think, was your best.
It has a little swagger.
Yeah,
too.
Maybe we'll find another one as we go through here today.
Hey,
but, go ahead. What?
Quick question.
Yeah.
So you have a daughter.
I
and,
do.
Did she ever have the boy band phase?
No. Nope.
Oh, you lucked out.
She has not. She's definitely like pop music, you know, top 40 type stuff. But but no, never got into the boy band thing. And I don't know if that was maybe just because that was like the real popularity of that was when she was much, much younger.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that just never caught on with her.
You know, growing up, a lot of my friends who were girls went through a boy band phase. Mm-hmm. And now what I've noticed is that some of those groups got back together and went on reunion tours or something. And my friends who are about my age are Twitter-pated about this stuff. They love it. They go to these concerts.
Really? They didn't have enough of the initial go-around, huh? So they have to go back for more, spend hundreds of dollars for tickets?
And I was asking what the appeal of this was because it's not a world that I ever lived in. And one of the things that really stuck out is they said, well, you know, they each have their own personalities. There's like the bad guy, and then there's the heartthrob and the quiet one. And I said, yes, but it seems as though they're all the same 4 to 5 characters,
yeah,
aren't they?
It's a big formula, right?
Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, my friends like this were aware of it, but then they also said, well, it's not just the singing or the music itself, it's a whole image. And one of the things that they really liked was the choreography, the dance moves that these people would make. Now, you know, the idea of this sort of overall performance dates back for a while. Probably the closest I ever got to liking a boy band would be when I was a kid, my parents had a Monkees record, you know, and I thought the Monkees were cool when I was a kid.
You can't really call that a boy band, though, because that means that there are so many bands across all of, you know, spanning all of music. That would be considered boy bands then.
That's a good point, Scott.
But I think what we're talking about is like the ones that come out, they don't really play instruments, they just
right.
sing and dance.
And if they sing and they don't write their own songs.
Yeah.
And apparently they lip sync a lot.
Yeah.
I was disappointed to learn that the Monkees neither wrote their own songs nor sang live
yeah.
sometimes.
That's one of those, that is a disappointment when you learn that, yeah.
But it is not for, it's not for nothing. Ladies and gentlemen, that we're giving our super producer the name NSYNC, and it's not related to boy bands, but by way of an out of left field, amazing save segue, one thing that boy bands have in common with today's topic is synchronization.
Yeah, choreography, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's well planned, well thought out. Concise, very, very precise, I
mm-hmm.
guess, in all aspects. But you know what? Can we divert from this for just one
moment?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, we have an important announcement.
We will get to this topic, I promise. We're going to quit talking about bands. We're going to move on to our daily topic. But I do want to talk about something else that's really important to us and to the show and
mm-hmm.
to one of our listeners as
a
well.
A long time listener.
It should be. I think it's important to all of our listeners, really.
Yeah.
Long time listener, good friend of the show. His name is Glenn Beck.
Mm-hmm.
And,
hey, Glenn.
Hi, Glenn. And Glenn is doing another rally again, another charity rally.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing it through the same group. And it is through Rally North America once again. And this time it is the Big Sky Rally 2016. Now, this is a 5-day event that's happening in July, from July 11th to July 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts out in Billings, Montana, goes through Big Sky, Montana, Great Falls, Montana, Kellogg, Idaho, Kennewick, Washington, and then ends in Portland, Oregon. And along the way, they're going to have like auctions, and
mm-hmm.
they're going to go to a couple of racing venues. They're going to do a drag racing event or a drag strip activity, I suppose,
mm-hmm.
you know, like an evening there.
Sure.
I think that's in Acton, Montana, at the Yellowstone Drag Strip. And then in Portland, They're going to go to the Portland International Raceway for the conclusion of the whole thing. So that's going to be really, really cool. And what this is all about really is about the charity. Mm-hmm. So this year's current benefactor is Camp Sunshine, and this is something that they have actually rallied for in the past. It's definitely a worthy charity. And I'll just read you a little bit from Glenn's note that he writes to, or that he wrote to us. Mm-hmm. He says, this July I'll be joining over 150 other charity-minded auto enthusiasts in Billings, Montana for a 5-day scavenger hunt on wheels through the Pacific Northwest. Sounds like fun, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's all to help Camp Sunshine in their mission to provide aid for families of children with life-threatening illnesses. I'll be participating as Team Limer.
Team Limer, of course.
Yep, go Team Limer.
Yeah.
In my 2006 Legend Lime Mustang GT. And I will continue to use the alter ego for this race of, of Bailey's team. It's to honor a family of a little girl with a very rare blood disorders. And I've seen his car with Bailey's team, you know, the logos for that. It's, mm-hmm. it's really cool. He's kept it on there that whole time. And, let's see, I'm gonna tell you, I've got a link here that we can, you know, post on our Facebook and Twitter.
Sure.
As the time approaches, maybe to coincide with the release of this, but, Glenn is, you know, we'll be accepting donations, of course, and, mm-hmm. I'll be there to donate as well. Mm-hmm. But again, these all go directly to Camp Sunshine, and, he says, Rally North America doesn't see a penny. I don't see a penny myself. It all goes to the charity itself. So it's great. He says, so please give if you can, give generously if you can. We'd really appreciate it. And, you know, go there if you feel like it. Check it out. Check out Rally North America's site. It's rallynorthamerica.com.
Send us some photos if you go.
Oh, absolutely. We've had listeners that have met these guys for lunch somewhere, or maybe, you knew that they were going to the drag strip, so they go there. I did that. Mm-hmm. Met up with a lot of these people. Talked with them. Yeah, exactly. Up in Athens, and along the way, some people have sent us photographs of the rally cars passing their place of business mm-hmm. or the school. Mm-hmm. Really, really cool. And one last quick thing. I know that this has happened in July. We're going to release this pretty soon here. We're going to publish this. He writes a PS here on the note. It says, Rally North America has issued a challenge to us. Teams that raise $500 in donations before the end of April get a special Camp Sunshine t-shirt. And the top fundraisers get a spot at the front of the grid for each day's start. He says, I've got to have that t-shirt and I got to get one for my navigator too. So, consider that too. And again, I'll post a link if you want to go there and check it out. It's definitely a worthwhile cause. Please look into it. And again, Glenn, stand up guy.
Yeah.
Check out the group and the charity. Anything you want, it's all very worthwhile.
Yeah, we assure you, Glenn Beck is one of the good guys. And every time that he does a rally, it is for a worthwhile cause.
Absolutely.
So if you want to learn more about it, if you'd like to donate, you can check out our Facebook and Twitter where we are CarStuffHSW for more information on that. And also, I think we have a few pictures of Team Limer up on the Facebook, right?
Yeah, we do. And he's, of course, liked on the page, so mm-hmm. you can find it that way. And he's always commenting on stuff that we post anyway, so you can get in contact with him that way too. But, again, this link that I'm going to post will go mm-hmm. directly to his page, so he'll get credit for it then. That's kind of what we're looking for here on the show.
Yeah. And, again, thank you, Glenn, for doing this, and thank you for giving us an opportunity to, let everyone else know about it. Today's topic, synchronized driving. And it's weird that we somehow went on a boy band tangent because we both know fairly little about it.
I know almost nothing about it, really.
I assumed you would have some inside knowledge. That was my assumption just for having a daughter. But the fascinating thing that we're getting to today is, and this is not to in any way denigrate human choreography, but I feel like it's an order of magnitude more impressive when you're synchronized in an automobile. And we started talking about this just last week before we went to air. This is it would be accurate to call it as a specialization in the category of stunt or precision driving.
Yeah, and oftentimes when you see, I guess displays of this, whether it's done at a racetrack on the main stretch, as part of like the ceremony leading up to the race.
Sure, an exhibition.
Or you see it in a commercial or whatever. A lot of times you'll find that these are Hollywood stunt drivers that are called in to do this because they know car control. They're very good at precision work. And if they're not Hollywood, then they're skilled and trained elsewhere in the same way that that a Hollywood stunt driver would be.
Right. There's an overlap there for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. These are trained professionals.
So you can go on YouTube now and find a couple of different clips of some extraordinarily impressive, at times heart-stopping precision driving stunts with teams of even as many as 12 cars doing proximity driving, doing crazy reverse 360 turns, weaving in and out of different obstacles.
Lots of precision drifting where the drifting simultaneously. And I'm not talking about the drifting events, you know, like Formula D or anything.
Right.
I mean, I'm talking about, you know, like for car commercials or for promotional pieces for the company, for the manufacturer maybe, where, you know, they're on a racetrack somewhere and they're just having fun. Like there's a bunch of, you know, Lexus cars. They'll bring out like the LFA Spider or they'll bring out, you know, their RCF coupes. And they'll run them around the Fuji Speedway for a while and have them drift and do just amazing things. You know, the car control is so impressive in these displays. It's just unbelievable. You have to see it to believe it, really, in a lot of cases. And what's neat is that every time you look at a different one, because there's a bunch of them online, you can search for a lot of different things to get this all to come up.
Sure, sure.
Every one of them is different in some way. They don't all do the same exact tricks, and that's what makes it interesting. There's always something new, something unique, something crazy that they show you that you have to back up and watch that again because you can't believe it's really happening.
And you can tell these teams came up with these techniques themselves or this application of these techniques. This is, of course, the moment where we should probably say, don't try this at home, because once you see the kind of driving that we're talking about, even if you're familiar with our earlier work on stunt drivers, right, stunt driving schools, they might make it look easy, but do not be deceived.
Yeah, you know what? I can tell you one, if you want to look at one clip that will show you that maybe you shouldn't try this.
Ooh, I want to know which one.
there's a synchronized, let's put it this way. You go to the Top Gear website and search for this. An AMG display from South America.
Oh, I saw that one.
And I'm sorry, South Africa.
Yeah, South Africa.
And it's described as what happens when synchronized driving goes wrong.
Oof.
And it's from the announcer's box, and you can hear the announcer, and you see these cars headed opposite directions on the racetrack. They're supposed to weave in and out of each other, two from each side. They're AMG cars, beautiful cars. The last two just smash right into each other. Near head on, not quite, but you can tell there's some serious damage. Puts an immediate end to the display. It's shocking when you see it because you know that they've practiced this so many times. You know that. You know they've practiced
right.
Probably in an open parking lot somewhere. But it's been practiced. And in front of the crowd when it really counted, that's when it kind of fell apart. And that can happen. Oh, man, I don't know how it doesn't happen more often with some of the other ones that I saw.
It's a matter of milliseconds.
Yeah, it really is, because when you get to the groups that are a dozen or more cars like you were talking about, that's where it just bends the mind, you know, how much of that they have to remember at all times, because their view is completely different from our view up in the stands or, you know, from the camera tower. Their view is a lot different on the ground. And to kind of put that all together in your head and remember that you go left at this time, right at that time, and even though you can see a car there now, you aim for this spot. And, you know, all that stuff is really, really tricky.
So I would like to start this conversation with one of my favorite precision stunt driving teams to watch, which was the Hyundai precision stunt driving team. The amazing thing about these drivers is the following. One, they knew every trick in the book. Two, they were known for this, the same way that the Harlem Globetrotters were known for the amazing tricks they could pull with the basketball.
Isn't this weird that Hyundai had their own precision driving team?
Mm-hmm.
When do you think this was? The 80s or 90s?
I know they were still doing some shows in 2002.
Oh, no kidding. So they were around for a long, long time.
They were around for a while.
The cars that I saw, the dozen or so or 15 or whatever it was cars, they're red and white sedans, I think they were. Nothing really spectacular, but it was whatever Hyundai was offering at the time.
That's my favorite. That's the third part, the most impressive part to me, is that they're not highly customized stunt cars. These are like Elantras and Sonatas and
front wheel drive, the company's products.
Right. One of the most amazing moves, which is super dangerous and insane, you have to see it to believe it, is when after they do a bunch of proximity driving where these folks are weaving the Elantras together to a ridiculously awesome soundtrack, by the way. They form this single sinuous line where the cars are maybe 6 inches apart at times. You saw that.
Yeah, you know, maybe less.
And then the big finish, or the one that most impressed me, rather, is when a team with two guys in the car drives just on the left wheels. So it's just driving on two wheels, passenger side, you know, the right side, up in the air, nearly vertical. Not quite, but nearly. Close enough to vertical that you could rest something on the side and it wouldn't fall off. That is how precise this is. And then, right, that's already impressive. That's pretty dangerous.
Oh, sure.
How could you do that? And then to up the stakes, the part that really impressed me was the second driver is sitting in the back. And then as soon as the car gets vertical, this guy pops out, takes out one tire and puts it on the side of the vehicle. And then while they're still driving vertically, he changes the back right tire. Doesn't drop a lug nut. The car never wavers. And the car is moving the entire time, mind you.
Yeah, pretty impressive.
And then he just pops the other tire back in, sits down, and you think, wow, that's so impressive. And then they keep driving. They do a couple turns, and the dude comes back out with a Hyundai flag. It starts waving it. And I was, by that point, I was completely on board. Yeah, I was like, you earned that.
What else has he got back there?
I know. What's next? Is he going to take another car out?
I feel like I've seen this imitated in real life on, what's that? In the UAE, I guess, maybe there's that huge that giant wide, it almost looks like a runway, an airport runway, mm-hmm. but it's a highway. Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of like horrific high speed accidents on that road. I know it, but a lot of the young guys use that for stunt driving of just their personal vehicles and showing off
and filming with the GoPro. Yeah. And so they'll ghost ride the whip and then they'll also go vertical and then they'll jump over their buddies.
Yeah, exactly. And I've seen that, you know, where people are sitting on the ground and they're riding on two wheels right next to them or they do the thing with the tire. Like you said, they take both. You know, right side tires off if they're up in the air.
You gotta really trust somebody.
Yeah, I mean, and this is just done, you know, out in the open. It's not, in some controlled environment like these guys did with the Hyundai thing. But yeah, these Hyundai drivers are really something else to watch. I mean, and again, it's so strange that they're using like a two wheel drive, four door, just their simple basic sedan, you know, whatever
no mods.
It was. It's really, no modifications at all. It's not anything like a sports car or anything. It's just their product. And another one that did this too, Ben, there's a second version of this from Isuzu.
Ah.
And I don't know if you saw the Isuzu ad or not, but I don't even know if you can call it an ad. It's more of a music video, really, that Isuzu put out. And this would have been back in the 1980s, again, I think, just based on the way the vehicle looked, but it's the Isuzu Gemini. And it's probably a TV advertisement, but it's really, really impressive. And they kind of up the ante with a lot of jumps. They do like ramp to ramp jumps and things over formations of cars that are driving underneath the ramps.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really cool. And again, more drifting, really, really precise driving in that instance. It's just a really cool thing to look up. It's called Dancing in Paris, if you want to look it up. And I think that's maybe one version of it. There's another one that was like, I forget the name. It maybe like Romanian March or something. The music is different, but it's the same driving.
And Isuzu still has a precision driving team today, the D-Max.
Really? Do they?
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding. And I think I saw one from Cadillac. And Cadillac was at the Shanghai Grand Prix track, and I think it was kind of a pre-race activity thing. But they were, of course, precision driving their Cadillac CTS-V models. And I don't know exactly what year that was going down. BMW's had some commercials. Oh, they did one. BMW did one that I don't know if you saw it or not. It was on a roundabout. Did you see that one?
Maybe I haven't.
Okay. This one is called BMW Epic Drift Mob Feet. That's a long title, I know.
Epic Drift Mob Feet.
You can probably just look up BMW Drift Mob. And what they do is instead of, you know, like these
drift
flash.
Mob
like,
sounds
like,
cool.
Well, it is cool. Here's what happens. And it's I don't know how much of this is staged and how much isn't, but you know how the old flash mobs would show up and shut down an area and like do a dance or whatever some kind of thing and then all just disperse?
Yes.
Same idea, only they used, I believe it's four or five BMW M235i cars, on a roundabout. And so they had people block off the traffic, you know, people dressed up to look like police persons, people, blocked off the traffic, and then these four cars entered, and they did this choreographed thing around the roundabout with lots of drifting, of course, and some, like, alternate directions, you know, like cars headed right towards each
figure
other.
Figure eight kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think, you know what, it was five now, because I remember one where, you know, four cars spin out and make kind of a block form, and another car drifts through the middle of
Whoa.
It. Yeah, which is on a roundabout. So it's really, really precise. It's really cool. It's very short, and I think it was used for a commercial or at least for, like, a Twitter ad or something like that.
You know, also Holden had a precision driving team.
Okay. That might have been the one that I saw that I couldn't tell what those vehicles were because it was blurry. It was like an old pixelized video that I saw.
They did one with VP Commodores.
That's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one. I couldn't tell what type of vehicle that was at first because, it was too pixelated. But that is maybe one of the most impressive displays I've ever seen.
That was Bathurst 1992, I think.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. Incredible. If you can look that up, if you're able to do that right now or, you know, can do it later, that's one to look at. What was the track again?
It was Bathurst, 1992. You can check out Holden Precision Driving Team.
Yeah, and those moves are unreal, aren't they? I mean,
yes,
incredible. I mean, spinning around a car, getting like just doing those maneuvers anyway, like without the precision element. Like, just imagine just doing that with just a car on a big open parking lot. That's hard enough.
I feel like they drive the way Neo would drive in the Matrix.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, exactly right. I mean, I'm going to say that might even be the top one for me. I just didn't know what to call that or how to even look it up.
Mm-hmm.
I did watch it, and I forgot to write down the link or anything, but amazing car control.
Might be a little bit of a slow burn to you in some places, but if you check out what they're doing, just the physics and the timing of it should be astonishing. So there's something else here, and this might be a little bit of a plot twist for you.
Okay.
I want to talk about this.
All right.
So we're talking about precision driving. Scott, obviously you and Noel and I love the stunt driving. We love the drifting, and we love seeing, you know, any kind of death-defying act.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something bigger at play here. There's something more to the story of synchronized driving.
What is it?
Do you know where I'm going with this?
Maybe, maybe not. Are you thinking about racing? The split-second reflexes that drivers have?
Oh, that's a pretty good one. We could talk about that. This is a different one.
Okay, well, tell me what yours is then.
I really wanted to look at synchronized driving because my spider sense told me it would become even more important in the coming years.
Really? More important? This type of precision, this type of control will be more important? You're talking for autonomous vehicles, of course,
yes.
Right?
But nail on the head.
Are you talking about humans avoiding autonomous vehicles? Are you talking about autonomous vehicles being able to do this on their own without, you know, without our input?
Right. I am. I'm talking about autonomous vehicles functioning in a interconnected network. Well, I guess that's a repetitive phrase. All networks should be interconnected networks.
So this would be like formation driving.
Yeah, this is like formation driving.
Like schooling.
Yeah,
schooling on the highway.
Yes, and even further than that, Scott, this would be critical for the fleet function that autonomous vehicles will need to perform if they are to ever function in a feasible way in the actual world, actual rubber on the road.
Yeah.
So the thing that we're talking about is not just autonomous driving in fleets or, you know, prioritizing lanes on a two-lane highway, right, with an autonomous tractor or something and then an autonomous sports car. What we're looking at is the idea of complex stop-and-go traffic functioning at high speeds. Wait for it. Without traffic lights.
Ah, without traffic lights. Okay, so busy intersections that now have traffic lights with no type of control at all because not needed really.
Right. MIT has been doing some research on this and has some calculations that prove, I hope you can hear my air quotes here, folks, that prove in theory that this would be safer, lead to more efficient traffic, lower emissions, and a dramatic reduction in accidents.
All right. Do you recall when we were talking about Audi with this type of technology not long ago?
Yep.
And it was the idea was that, and again, with the school mentality, like a fish school mentality, that if there were enough vehicles that were autonomous that had this system that they were talking about built in, that they could all kind of control traffic on their own, even if it meant that not every single car had this technology.
Right. It could still function.
But only like 60% of them or something like that. It was a relatively low percentage when you think about controlling every other vehicle around you.
I think it was still over half though.
I think you're right. And the idea was though that it would time, or instead of timing the lights, like instead of, making them cascade or making them all time for the exact same cycle or whatever. The idea was that the car would know when that light is going to turn green because it was tipped in on what that computer was thinking. The traffic control computer that controls the city,
which is a true thing. Check out our podcast on traffic lights. It is far more interesting than it might sound at first.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, there's definitely central computers that are controlling hundreds of intersections and cities
in
one time.
City.
Very, very cool, and changing it all the time as well. But the idea was that it would know when that was going to happen, and it could either speed up or slow down to make that next light. And this idea that you're talking about seems to kind of match that. It's like another evolution of that idea.
Yeah. It's V2V, so it's vehicle to vehicle interaction, wherein every car knows its position relative to, or I shouldn't say car, every vehicle knows its position relative to other vehicles. And this specific research comes from MIT's Sensible Lab, S-E-N-S-E-able.
Ah, okay.
It's a pun,
sure.
Right?
Gotcha.
And they teamed up with the Swiss Institute of Technology and the Italian National Research Council to see if they could actually replace traffic lights, remove traffic lights entirely. And what they found is that they would need a bunch of host sensors, and then they also found two other weaknesses. I already mentioned the pros, right? Fewer accidents, more efficient traffic. You'll get from point A to point B with fewer obstacles, fewer emissions. Although I'm still not sold on that one, because what if 0.05% less could still qualify as fewer?
Well, and hopefully zero road rage as well, because the general idea is that every one of these vehicles is being considerate to the other one.
Mm-hmm.
That, someone's two lanes over to the left. Well, maybe this situation wouldn't even happen because, like the last minute when someone tries to make an off ramp or something.
Yeah.
And right now the human element sometimes won't let you do that. And
the human element.
Well, you know what I mean.
I hear your road rage bubbling.
Some drivers maybe would not let somebody get over to do that.
Right.
And the idea would be that, they would all sense that car needs to get over to that ramp and allow it to happen, whatever that takes, either speeding up, slowing down, allowing it through. But again, maybe that situation would never happen. There's all these different scenarios, really. Maybe it would be in the proper lane to begin with. It wouldn't be that last minute decision.
But in some cases, the simple structure of a roadway compared to a route that has no possible deviation requires like a left hand turn and then a swing in two lanes across or something.
Yeah, sure. That happens.
But this stuff, despite all the pros and despite the fact that companies and governments are pouring collectively hundreds of millions, if they haven't hit the billion mark yet, of dollars into research on this, there are still some big cons. And one of the biggest cons for this MIT, Swiss, and Italian project on intersections is that even if they reach this this holy grail of synchronized autonomous driving, there are two huge factors that are not even part of the equation yet.
Now, what are those?
One, what happens if the internet connection breaks down?
Ah, okay.
Right? Because if these are V2V, the vehicles are talking to one another and one of them loses touch, then all of a sudden we have we have
potential chaos.
Right. It's like if there was to go back to the earlier dancing analogy, just because I can't think of a better one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, you know what? Football would be a better one, because in football, every member of the team needs to be clued in, ideally needs to know what's going to happen on this play and what their position is in this play and how they can best support the overall team. So in this analogy, what if one of those football players goes blind?
Right in the middle of the play.
Right in the middle of the play.
Yeah.
That's what happens if an internet connection breaks down, unless these vehicles have some sort of internal redundancy, you know, unless they have an ability to.
Well, we're all hoping that that is something that they do consider and build in, I'm sure.
Oh, they have
that
to.
There
yeah.
has to be these fail safes, you know, that happen. But how do the rest of the vehicles react to it? That's the question. How does that affect that choreography, that mm-hmm. synchronicity that's
yeah.
happening on the street at the time? Is it, do they handle it in that, you know, that car just pulls over to the side until it, you know, reestablishes the connection? Does mm-hmm. it continue on with some kind of just like a blind, dumb program that says continue on your path?
Based on the last information
yeah,
you received?
Or somehow based on what everybody else is doing. Like if you're going 55 and you can't slow down because you're in the middle of a group.
Does it just go to proximity sensors that are on board?
Exactly. Like does it reduce itself to maybe something like an adaptive cruise control where it just maintains mm-hmm. until something takes control, you know, whether that's the human rider
yeah.
or, you know, that's a bigger system maybe that says we've got one out of control here. Let's, let's bring it in. But then it's like, that's almost like someone's, like an aircraft controller or something,
mm-hmm,
you know, that
mm-hmm.
they're bringing it, but having remote control able to steer it to safety. That's kind of a scary thought too.
Yeah. And this goes to another idea, which would be the legal status of people in an autonomous vehicle. So far, all of the experiments on road with an autonomous vehicle have required a qualified driver to be at the helm, to man the wheel in case something goes wrong. And in this case, then, what it sounds like we're proposing would be that if the network interaction or the network connection breaks down for an individual vehicle, then there's proximity sensors, adaptive cruise control, maybe a fail-safe that requires the vehicle to pull over and stop servicing, or that the driver has to, you know, land the plane.
Well, you know, here's the thing that one question I've got with this
yeah.
this whole thing. You said that there would have to be somebody who is licensed behind the wheel
mm-hmm.
that could take over.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the situation we're in right now, where they can't say that it's autonomous, but it really is autonomous.
Right.
Have to have a driver in the driving position, a licensed driver.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just, you know, put your 12-year-old kid in the car and say, you know, take him to grandma's house.
Go with God, Billy.
Yeah, you can't. You can't just do that right now. And that's the thing. Like, what about this scenario where?
Okay.
All right, this is the last one, I promise. But one of our listeners, Rudy Smith writes in
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
He's made a very good point of this, and I meant to bring this up a lot earlier, but one of the things that he's looking forward to about autonomous vehicles is that it increases mobility for older drivers. You know, people that maybe are to the point where they're going to lose their license, their mm-hmm. vision's failing, they're not as quick with the reaction time. You know, it's just a safety thing.
Yeah.
So that, you know, they can maintain mobility longer in life. And I think that's a fantastic idea for these things. You know, that's a great use for them. But what happens if, you know, something happens to their vehicle when they're behind the wheel and they're mm-hmm. not a licensed driver anymore, but they're not, you know, like a young kid. They're old enough, you know, they're responsible adults. They're just out on their own. But let's say that they're legally considered blind, or they have, a physical condition that restricts movement of
right.
the right shoulder or something, and they're not able to maneuver a vehicle the way that they could
mm-hmm.
10 years ago.
Or their reaction time is just slowed.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, we're talking about people that maybe at a point where they would have had to surrender their standard driver's license, but they can get an autonomous license because, well, it's a way to extend their mobility.
Careful. They can buy an autonomous subscription fee. People won't be buying their own autonomous cars for a while.
Okay. All right. Well, point taken. But
point taken as well. That's a really good point. We could increase mobility for a vast swath of the population, especially in countries where there is a grain boom. You know,
mm-hmm.
countries like Japan, frankly, parts of the U.S.
Oh, sure. That's going to be even more critical in the decades to come. I think very soon, as a matter of fact, with all the boomers getting older, there's going to be a point where they're not going to want to give up that driving privilege, of course.
Who would want to?
No one does. And that's the hard part about this whole thing is you have to decide when and if this is a solution to extend that, you know, why not? Hey, you know, you took this a different direction than I thought you were going to.
Boom, surprises. I'm a regular M. Night Shyamalan.
I like it. That was a good idea that, you know, they do have to operate in a synchronized way. Come back to what I was talking about.
I didn't mean to hijack it.
No, not at all. I mean, I just wanted to mention this. And maybe this is like getting into a little bit of an OCD thing of mine.
All right.
This is where I see this as well. There's something very pleasing to me, very comforting about this. And I know it's weird to say it this way, but it is. I'll describe it and see if someone else feels the same way about this. But at the beginning of a race, when the pace car is pulled off. Now, I know there's you know, the parade laps and, you know, they drive by and they wave the crowd and everything. And the cars are still warming up and they're you know, wiggling around trying to get the tires warm.
But when the actual race.
When the pace car pulls off and the car's around turn four, and the flagman's there with the green flag in his hand or her hand, watching, waiting to wave that flag. The cars get into a very precise, precision lineup. You know, it's Indianapolis, it's 11 rows of three. You know, other races, you know, it's maybe two, you know, side by side. Mm-hmm. But they're all in exact order. And the flagman won't wave that flag until they're in that order. So it can't be all jumbled up. To me, for whatever reason, I just find it so... It's almost like soothing to see it. It's like, oh, they're all in line. This is all going to go down just the way it should. I feel good about it right at that moment. And then, of course, the second the green flag comes out, you know, everybody darts all over the place.
All hell breaks loose.
Chaos. Yeah. But honestly, there's something about that start. Sometimes a restart where everybody's in precision, you know, a precise line, but they're so close together. It's a lot like watching some of these synchronized teams working together.
Right.
But these are all individuals that just, they're simply good drivers and they know what to expect out of the driver in front of them and the driver behind them.
And they're also competitive rather than collaborative, which I think is even more impressive.
Well, exactly. So, you know, they're counting on that driver to do what that driver's supposed to do. They know that, you know, if you're, say at Indianapolis, you're on the outside, inside, or, I guess there's a middle position as well. Mm-hmm. So three wide, that's tough to maintain. But everybody's got a role, and if they mess that up, you're gonna wreck the day for, you know, three or four other cars as well, other teams rather. Again,
it happens.
I know it's like a little bit OCD. I get it.
Do you think so?
I feel, I think it is. I just like things lined up. I like things precise like that. So the synchronized driving, these displays that we're watching.
Yeah.
I enjoy watching that. I mean, it's nerve wracking sometimes, you know, to see what they're doing. But when they're all in formation and all lined up like that, there's something nice about that.
I have three things, but they're really quick.
Okay.
Is that cool?
Sure.
Okay. So first, I completely agree with you. I don't think it's necessarily a symptom of OCD because when I'm working on a lot of stuff and I need to slow down or chill out, one of the things I'm really fond of is finding a video with a nice camera shot, a nice camera angle rather, of a busy intersection in a time lapse and just having that play. And sometimes I put on like slow music and it's almost a meditative thing to watch.
Is that right? Like you do that like an Indian intersection or something, like an Asian Indian intersection?
Yeah.
Like where it's just craziness, but somehow everybody gets through?
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. And I like watching them in time lapse.
Really?
So you can see, because you can see the pattern, I think, a little bit better when you see it in time lapse.
I may have a perfect video for you to watch then.
Oh man, please send it.
I'll tell you what to search.
Okay.
It's on YouTube and this is an edited piece, but it's called Rush Hour Intersection, Traffic Condensed into 1 Minute. It's a long title again.
Uh-huh.
Rush Hour Intersection, Traffic Condensed into 1 Minute. And again, this is edited, but it's highly impressive. And it gives the impression, because of the way they move the camera, it's like they had a lockdown shot of this intersection.
Mm-hmm.
And they fake the camera moves, like a push in, push out, or whatever. But you'll see that, like, there'll be – it's just this crazy chaos scene where – many cars are coming through, bicycle riders, there are police cars, there's walkers, there's a little bit of everything, you know, pedestrians going through.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody, it's all narrow misses, but no one stops moving. They all move continuously. And the way it's edited together is so clever and so crafty that you think it's all one shot. It's really, really, it's interesting. I think you're going to like it if you like that type of thing.
Oh, man.
And
it,
again, it's only 1 minute, and it's pretty incredible to watch. I mean, I've watched it two or three times now, and I marvel at how they do it.
Yeah, I personally love that stuff. So, listeners, if you have any videos that fit that description or any hot leads for me, please send them to our email. The other two things.
Yeah.
The big piece that I didn't get to earlier that's missing from this MIT research is the presence of pedestrians, the presence of bicycles. We're not going to have autonomous bikes for a while. We're going to have autonomous fleets of cars first, but we will probably, hopefully, always have pedestrians. I mean, even now, of course, there are places where pedestrians are not legally allowed to be present, right?
Oh,
like
sure.
A highway.
Yeah, the highways, yeah.
But pedestrians should be present in most surface level streets, right?
Yeah, city, just normal city congestion. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So what about like stray dogs and things like that too?
Right, right. What about stray dogs? What about someone who accidentally stumbles in? What about the human element? How does a vehicle in a network of vehicles react to someone running out in the street, and then what effect does that have on the rest of the network?
See, this is where I think it might work better than it does right now, in that, you know, they can communicate to vehicles two, three, four cars back,
yeah,
instead of somebody, you know, two, three or four cars back having to abruptly slam on the brakes.
That might
work better.
Everybody
could be more, it could be more of a gradual slowdown, like a ripple effect, instead of the way it is now, where it's just an immediate obstruction that, you know, that one person deals with in one way, and then another one has less time to react, and the person behind them has even less time to react because it's an abrupt stop or whatever the case may be. Someone swerved, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
All those weird traffic situations. I think that if it can ripple out like that, if you know one can communicate that there's a problem three cars ahead, slow down, that'd be great. Because right now no one does that.
It's sort of already happening. We're seeing a proto version of this with that GPS app Waze, you know, which I've raved about to you before.
Yeah, I use it. Well, I don't personally have it. My wife has it, and we use it when we're driving.
But that's doing some of the same things that we were talking about in a ways. You're welcome, everybody. I am so sorry. But it's doing the same thing when it has an alert pop up that says, there's a hazard ahead, or there's heavy traffic, or here's an alternate route.
Yeah.
One thing about Waze, man, I really dropped the ball on Waze. I did a dumb move, my friend.
What happened?
So I was messing around with Waze, and I had stopped somewhere to get some gas. And then while I was waiting for the pump to fill up, this thing came on with Waze, and it said, do you want to have a different person do the voice? It was free. I guess it was a promotion for a film or something.
Oh, okay.
And so I said, sure. And I didn't really pay attention to it other than to note that it was free, because, of course, it's me we're talking about. And then I turned it on, and now I am so sick of Morgan Freeman telling me what to do.
Morgan Freeman,
it's
really?
Morgan Freeman's voice.
No kidding.
At first I thought it was going to be fine, Scott, because that guy has a cool voice. But now it got to the point where I looked really bad in front of someone because they were driving, and I'm yelling at Morgan Freeman like, "No, you turn left. You turn
left."
That's
funny. So what's the standard? It's just kind of a generic voice that they launched this app with, right?
Yeah, the generic voice is typically, actually, for things like Siri and in almost any automated voice, the majority of those voices are going to sound female.
Okay.
Do
they have other, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah,
you,
no,
but,
no,
but
no.
Do they have other actor or celebrity options?
Yeah, I assume they do.
Well, who do you think you want to go with next? Who would be your next Waze voice that you think you're going to select?
The thing is, man, I'm always in such a hurry that I know it's only going to take a couple of minutes, if that, but every time I hop in the car and I'm pulling up Waze, I'm usually running late to something. So I haven't switched it back over, but I'm sure there's just a, an embarrassment of riches when it comes to voices.
And you'll just go with whatever's free, right?
Yeah, I'll go with whatever I don't have to pay for. Like, I don't know if I would do your voice or Josh or Chuck's voice, or I definitely wouldn't do my voice.
That's hurtful. Why would you say something like that?
I'm sorry, man. I feel like it would damage the show because I'm just learning. I guess I was accustomed to this sort of generic American accent sounding stranger's robot voice. And now I feel like I have beef with Morgan Freeman.
I wonder if you can get accents, like if you could have a Southern accent or if you could have maybe like a Northeast accent.
Right, right.
Yeah, that'd be kind of fun.
I bet there's somebody working on that if it hasn't happened yet.
A Jersey version of Waze.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jersey Waze. Oh, man. You heard it here first, folks, maybe. If so, please feel free to send the royalty check to How Stuff Works. If you feel like we are stealing your idea and you have a complaint about it, please email us. We are jonathan.strickland@howstuffworks.com. The last thing to end on here, the last thing before we go, one thing that we should mention about all of these precision stunt synchronized driving teams is that in every case I saw, each team is using the exact same car, which makes sense, right? You have to, if you want to be able to work that closely together in such precision oriented driving, then you have to eliminate all possible variables. Mm-hmm. But I would like to see a motley crew of precision drivers.
Well, I've seen not a motley crew by any means, but that Lexus one that I started with.
Yeah.
That one, they had the supercar. They had a couple of like their GT3 race cars.
Oh, I thought they were all.
No, see, that's the thing. They were on a racetrack and they're all just about equally matched in power and speed and all that, mm-hmm. Close enough.
Yeah, yeah.
And, professional drivers, but I would not call it a motley crew of vehicles by any means. And the one that did go wrong, the AMG cars.
Yeah.
That one was also a mix of vehicles.
I can't believe that totally whooshed because you did say Lexus, but then you said AMG.
Oh, no, that's totally fine. That AMG thing. Yeah, because we went right past that. But the Lexus example, where they are drifting around, the Fuji Speedway. Mm-hmm. You can watch that one. It's kind of neat, but it doesn't have the charm, I guess, of the older Hyundai or the older Isuzu commercials or the ads or whatever mm-hmm. those are really displays. They're all the same vehicles and all very, very precise and very, it's very nice to watch, isn't it? I mean, it's fun to watch.
Have you ever done precision driving or choreographed driving this way?
All right. I guess, not choreographed, but I'll tell you what we did do. And this is why I have such respect for the guys that can do this type of stuff.
Oh man.
In high school, there was a neighborhood that was being built, and I hope the statute of limitations is long past.
Sure,
this,
sure.
I would think. Okay. There was a neighborhood that was being built in our city. It wasn't really that close to the school or anything, but we knew where mm-hmm. it was, an open place. They had the roads in, dirt lots, piles of stuff, some
no
building materials,
yet.
No houses, nothing like that. And, probably was being monitored by police all the time, but we didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of wide open streets, fresh asphalt and lots of possibilities for kids with, an Escort GT that's a 5-speed and, lots of imagination. And, I would take, I'd sometimes take my mom's cars there, which were nothing fancy. They were like the K car versions of whatever,
Yeah.
But still kind of fun to drive.
Mm-hmm.
And we would try to do things like, full speed reverse, whip the wheel around. So you do like a 180, pull the emergency brake and then accelerate out with the wheels smoking, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We'd try that crap all the time. We'd do that. We'd try drifting, but with e-brake. That's how we'd do it.
Right.
It's front
wheel
drive.
Yeah.
We didn't know you could actually drift a front wheel drive car at the time, but we probably would have. And we took Mustangs there. We took all kinds of, my friend's father worked for Ford and, had company cars all the time.
Oh,
so
wow.
We had all kinds of stuff and there were some shenanigans going on in that neighborhood, but it was fun, but we never quite nailed any one maneuver or anything. It was fun to try it and it only lasted for a little while until they started actually building houses there.
Right.
How about you? Any experience with maybe going to like a dirt road and trying to drift around corners and stuff like that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I experimented with the drifting stuff. Especially my friends who had cars that were better suited for it, but I think this will interest you. And listeners, I want to know if you've done this as well. This is a little bit of a road rage thing. My most effective synchronized driving has been with strangers on the road when we make a sudden bond. So there are a lot of roads here in Atlanta and in the metro area that are four lanes, two lanes of traffic each way, right?
Yeah.
And then because this is Atlanta, where there's so many terrible drivers, present company excluded, I hope. Well, I have my issues, and here's one. Whenever there is a – not whenever, sorry, Scott. Sometimes when there is a would-be stunt driver thinks they're great, they're above turn signals, they're tailgating everyone, they're swerving in and out unpredictably.
Oh, yeah. The kind when they change lanes, the vehicle kind of tilts to one side or the other. Yeah. I get it. It sways a bit.
So there have been times I'm on a two-lane road and then someone's being – just a complete jabroni.
You can say jackass.
I can? Okay. Yeah. A complete jackass.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
when someone's being a complete jackass about this stuff, I've had that moment. Maybe you've had it too, listeners, where I look at the car that's next to me in the other lane, the sane one, and we just sort of have that unspoken thing where we nod and we maintain the same speed.
Oh, you're blocking.
And we pace each other.
You're blocking the traffic.
We're blocking that guy.
You're blocking just that one guy. Yeah, I get it.
And this is one, the most extreme case, and this was still one of the coolest people that I'll never actually meet. The most extreme case was when me and this dude who's in really nice, it was like a brand new BMW. And we know that BMW drivers sometimes have a stereotype of being jerks. Not this guy. He was the best. And his car could have easily smoked the, it was like a Dodge Neon. And the guy was going nuts trying to
get around.
It looked like he was trying to get in an accident because he had been there for, 10 minutes and almost hit two people that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
I was driving in the right lane and I was in the right in the situation I maintained. But the worst thing, we slowed down. He looked at me and we both kept going slower. And he's by the end of it, we were doing maybe 30 on a 45 mile per hour, but there was no one else. It was just this one guy behind us buzzing like an angry hornet.
Yeah. That's not a good way to make friends.
No regrets. He deserved it. And I'm sure the statute of limitations has passed and I try not to. We've talked about road rage before. It's very tempting to be judge, jury, and executioner on the road. And one of the things my ex used to tell me was, she was like, Ben, this is not a teachable moment. You need to quit feeling that you are teaching people or educating people on the road. You're just being a jerk.
Yeah, you're just making them mad. That's all.
But I never started, Scott. I never started. I end it. Okay.
Well, there you go with the executioner part.
Oh, yeah, you're right. One day at a time, my friends. One day at a time.
Yeah, we're all guilty of a little road rage here and there, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Most people are.
I'm sure.
I mean, I think it's a very rare individual that allows all of that stuff to just go by without, you know, without any kind of animosity.
Noel's a super chill guy, though. He might be immune to road rage.
And a Waze user.
And a Waze user.
Yeah, and a Waze user. Yeah. That'd be Noel NSYNC Brown.
Yes, yeah. So I guess NSYNC won out over Hyundai.
I made it work. Yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we hope you enjoyed this. And please do send us some videos or stories of synchronized driving, your favorite synchronized driving experiences. If you happen to have had a bad experience as the driver of a purple Neon several years ago, then maybe we've already met. In which case, I do not apologize. In the meantime, we'd like to hear your suggestions. As we said at the top of the show, check with us on Facebook and Twitter for more information about Glenn's work and the upcoming rally.
Yeah, the rally for the Camp Sunshine people.
Right, the rally for Camp Sunshine. If you want to check out our earlier podcasts on precision driving, on stunt driving, then visit our website, carstuffshow.com, and if you have a suggestion for a topic, we'd love to hear it because all of our best show ideas come from you. Our address is
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.